past several weeks on our Sunday nights, we've been engaged in studies of some of the good paths that God has taught us in His Word, the good paths that we need to understand and walk in. We want to look at another one of those tonight, the pathway of equity. And we hope that we will all recognize that phrase from Scripture. If you do not, it's taken from the book of Proverbs, really, where we see this word equity used and described as being one of the good paths that we need to know and understand. Proverbs chapter 1, in fact, the first three verses of the book of Proverbs, as he's introducing this book and showing us the value and the necessity of these Proverbs that God has given to us, he tells us what it's for. In Proverbs 1:1-3, says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity." So there in the midst of what he has included there of those things that we need to be instructed in, or at the end of that, he says equity, being one of those things that we need to be instructed in. And we've already looked at the fruits of wisdom. We looked at righteousness and judgment and their pathways. So really, this is the only one of the ones that he mentions there in that passage or in those verses that we've not studied out in this series. So we want to do that tonight. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 9. This verse we've looked at several other points over the course of this overall study. But he says, "Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path." So he's speaking about those good paths that we are to learn, that we need to understand. And equity is one of those. Well, what is that word and what does it mean? In today's language in English, we almost always use that word for something to do with the value of your house, right? When you're building up that value with the money that you put in. The word itself means, the Hebrew word here, meshar, means evenness. It is derived from another Hebrew word, yashar, which means to be straight or even. Well, that's what the word implies. Equity, in English, it has its roots in the word equal. And so it's what is equal or even and straight. And it's translated equity, or it's translated equal. It's translated upright and straight. There's several different words that this particular Hebrew word or its root word is translated into in the Old Testament in English. But that's the basic meaning of it. It means to be even or straight. Now, one of the key characteristics of understanding this pathway is the same one that we considered in all the other ones. It starts with God. And when we're looking at the good paths, what is good comes from God. And then we would expect, and indeed we do find, that this word is used to describe the nature of God. In fact, 1 Chronicles chapter 29 and verse 17, he uses the very same word in Hebrew that we were just looking at in the Proverbs, where it's translated equity, this word meaning evenness or to be straight or even. Here he's translating it, it's translated as uprightness, but it's the same word. But this tells us about God's view of it in 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 17. As David is speaking and writing here concerning the nature of God, he says, "I know also, my God, that thou triest the heart and hast pleasure in uprightness." And so there is one of the things that God has great pleasure and joy in. It's part of his own nature. And if he sees that in us, he's going to be very pleased with us, as he will be pleased with us when we are following any and all of these good paths that we've been studying, all of these good paths that God teaches us about. That, of course, is part of his own nature that he's calling us to have in us as well. Now, David is one that, of course, he's the one being inspired to write that in 1 Chronicles 29, 17. A little bit later, Lord willing, we will go back and look at one of the Psalms that describes David as being one who was practicing this, that he was walking in this good path that God takes great pleasure in. But God takes great pleasure in uprightness, that is, in equity. This is how he judges and works with others, works with mankind. In Psalms 9, verses 6 and 7, he describes the work of God here with this particular word, again translated uprightness. Psalms 9, 6 and 7, he says, O thou enemy, destructions are come to a perpetual end, and thou hast destroyed cities. Their memorial is perished with them. But the Lord shall endure forever. He hath prepared his throne of judgment, and he shall judge the world in righteousness. He shall minister judgment to the people in uprightness. That's in equity and evenness. So God, in the way he judges, it's always going to be equal. It's going to be even. It's a particular concept that we would often describe as what is fair. So he's going to judge in that way with mankind. Let's see also Psalms 96 and verse 10. Psalms 96:10. Again, speaking about God. It says, Say among the heathen that the Lord reigneth. The world also shall be established, that it shall not be moved. He shall judge the people righteously. This is again using that same word, this translated equity, but it's translated righteously here. In Psalms 98 and verse 9, he says that before the Lord, for he cometh to judge the earth, with righteousness shall he judge the world and the people with equity. So there he uses that same word about the judgment of God. We see that several times in the Psalms, but describing God in his own ways and the way he judges mankind and deals with people. In Psalms 58, verses 1 and 2, we see a contrast, though, between God and the way God deals with men and the way man is towards man in general. Psalms 58, 1 and 2, Do ye indeed speak righteousness, O congregation? Do you judge uprightly, O you sons of men? Yea, in heart you work wickedness. You weigh the violence of your hands in the earth. So the question, do you judge uprightly, O you sons of men? And that word uprightly, again, is that word for equity, evenness. Do you judge this way? Do you judge like God judges, is the question. And are you walking in that good path of equity? Well, what's the answer? In verse 2, in most cases, what are people doing? They're working wickedness and violence and those things that are not aligned with judging in uprightness or equity. So the way that men deal and the way they judge and the way they see things and do things is, in, of course, most cases, out of line with God and his ways. So this is something that God also brought out in Ezekiel chapter 18, using a different word here, the Hebrew word takon, which means to balance. But if something is balanced, of course, it is even. So it's really a synonym. It's translated equal in this particular passage in Ezekiel chapter 18, verses 25 through 29. But it is the same concept or principle when he's using a synonym for equity here, equal, again, as it's translated. But this is a descriptive term for God's ways. But God is making the contrast between his ways and man's, and in this case, his own people Israel. Ezekiel 18:25-29. Yet ye say, the way of the Lord is not equal. Hear now, O house of Israel, is not my way equal, or not your ways unequal? When a righteous man turneth away from his righteousness and committeth iniquity and dieth in them, for his iniquity that he hath done shall he die. Again, when the wicked man turneth away from his wickedness that he hath committed and doeth that which is lawful and right, he shall save his soul alive, because he considereth and turneth away from all his transgressions that he hath committed. He shall surely live. He shall not die. Yet saith the house of Israel, the way of the Lord is not equal. O house of Israel, are not my ways equal, or not your ways unequal? And see, he's describing here how God judges and how he does so in equity. And when a man turns from his wickedness to do righteously, and God will pardon his iniquity and judge him for the righteousness that he is doing, is that not equal? Is that not right? Is that not fair and even? And when a man turns from doing what is good and right in God's sight to wickedness, for God to judge him for that wickedness that he's turned to, is that not right? Is that not equal or even? It is. But these people were accusing God by his judgment of being unequal in his ways. And that was a heavy and false accusation to make against God. Here, these people were in Babylon being punished for their own sins. Yet, if we went to the beginning of this chapter, they were claiming, using a proverb saying, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. They were claiming that they were being unfairly punished for something they didn't do. They said, it's our parents that did it. Anybody around today that are blaming their parents for all their problems? That's very much going on today too, isn't it? And it's not new, is it? Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, and blaming your parents for your own problems isn't new either. But guess what? It's still the same as it was then. It wasn't the parents' fault in that case. It isn't now in most cases. Here these people were being punished by God for their own sins. That's what God was saying. Every man's going to die for his own sins. So who was being unequal here? Who was judging wrongly? Here they were judging actually God, but they were doing so unrighteously. They weren't being balanced or even in the way they were judging God. And in their own ways, they had practiced this crookedness and inequity, being unequal in their ways, just like we were seeing in Proverbs a while ago, in the book of Psalms in 58 verses 1 and 2 a moment ago. And so that is, unfortunately, the way most people are. And by the way, we'll oftentimes hear people make this statement about life being unfair. That actually bothers me quite a bit when I hear that particular statement, because it really is very close to, if not identical, with what these people were saying right there. Who's in charge of life, by the way? That is, who's the one in charge of the universe? Who's the one running the universe? And for people to speak against the unfairness of it all, really, what are they saying? And probably not without thinking about it in a lot of cases. Hopefully that's what it is, but maybe not in some other cases. But in actuality, what they're really doing is saying that the one who's running the show, the one who's actually has authority and control over everything, is really not doing things in a fair way. Isn't that really what it's saying? If life is unfair. Now, are there people, like we've just seen in these scriptures, many people who operate unfairly and judge unequally or without equity? Yes, that's a big problem in the world. But God is the one that works it all out for the good of his children. If we will walk in his pathway, he's going to work it all together for good. Everything's going to be worked together for our good. So really, what do we have to complain about? And if we're going to say if it's unfair, then what are we saying about God? We need to consider what we're saying and consider that very seriously. People may be unfair, and they may treat us unfairly or unrighteously, but God is going to treat us very rightly always, and he's always going to judge righteously and in equity, and his judgments are good and right, and he's going to work it all for our good in the end. So we don't want to accuse him of anything. We don't want to be putting ourselves in the position where we're trying to judge our own maker and be falsely accusing him. So we need to be very careful about how we say things. These people weren't in Ezekiel 18, and look at how God felt about that. But in Isaiah chapter 26 and verse 7, he does show us that we can change our ways to be like God's. As he says there, the way of the just is uprightness. And that's the word for equity again. So if we're going to be righteous, then our ways, if we're righteous, will be in equity or uprightness, as he translates it there. So can we go from being unequal in our ways to walking in those paths, those good paths, including equity? Yes, just like we can find the wisdom of God. We can walk in righteousness. We can have God's judgment and practice his judgment and exercise his judgment. We can also follow that pathway of equity. So all these good paths are the ways of God. They are not the ways of the world at all, but we can change from being the way that most people are, the way the world is, to finding God's ways and his paths and walk in them. That's why we're studying this. And this is certainly true of this pathway of equity. Now let's look a little bit more about God and His ways and how they are equal and how He practices this or exercises this equity in His judgment. Back to the book of 2 Chronicles, if we can go to chapter 19 and verse 7. And this is a description of God and His ways that we will see stated numerous times in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And we'll also find in both Old and New Testaments the command for mankind to practice this. But this is part of that pathway of equity here. 2 Chronicles 19 and verse 7. Wherefore now let the fear of the Lord be upon you. Take heed and do it, for there is no iniquity with the Lord our God, nor respect of persons, nor taking of gifts. See, these are the things that men will engage in as part of their unequal ways, not following equity, but God doesn't do that. This is an example of unrighteous judgment that men follow when they'll take gifts. That's a bribe. That's when somebody gives you something and you're going to give them favorable judgment based not on what is right, but based on what they've given you, which the other party hasn't, so they're going to get the unfavorable judgment. Is that even? Is that right? No, that's not practicing equity. Neither is respecting persons, literally faces, the outside, the appearance. That's not the right way to judge and deal with others, based on the outward things. Yet that is what man will typically do. God does not. He doesn't take gifts. You can't bribe God. And He's not going to judge by the outward appearance. He's not going to judge on by fleshly or physical things, anything of that nature at all. Let's look at the New Testament, the same description of God in Acts chapter 10, verses 34 and 35. This in the context of when Cornelius and his household, the first Gentiles, were converted to Christ. The point being that God was accepting the Gentiles as He did the Jews, as He will anyone who does the things that He speaks about here. And we see the equity that God practices in His judgment, His uprightness in His judgment with all men. Acts 10, 34 and 35. Then Peter opened his mouth and said, "Of a truth I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. But in every nation, he that feareth Him and worketh righteousness is accepted with Him." Whoever it is. Look at the basis of God's judgment. He that fears Him and works righteousness. Well, you can read in Ecclesiastes 12, 10 and 11, when he says that the end of the matter is to fear God and keep His commandments. That's the whole duty of man. What's the difference between fearing God and keeping His commandments and fearing God and working righteousness? Well, what is righteous is God's commandments. We also have that in Psalm 119. So that's the same thing. So if we fear God and keep His commandments, that is working, doing what is righteous in His sight, God's going to accept us no matter who we are, no matter what we look like on the outside. He's not going to be a respecter of persons, that is literally, again, faces, the outward appearance. He's going to judge us all according to what's in our hearts and what we do. Is that fair? Is that equal? Yes, just like he was describing a while ago in Ezekiel 18. Let's look at 1 Samuel 16 and verse 7, when he sent the prophet Samuel to anoint David to be the next king of Israel. At this particular moment in time, Samuel didn't know it was going to be David. He knew it was going to be one of the sons of Jesse. But when he saw the first one, Eliab, come before him, and he was clearly a very tall and handsome man. And Samuel was looking at his appearance and concluded, this is the Lord's anointed. This has got to be him. Look at what the Lord said, though, in verse 7 of 1 Samuel 16. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature. Now, his countenance, his face, what he looked like, his handsomeness, how tall he was. Don't look at those things, God said. Now, that's respecting faces. That's looking on the outward appearance. But here's what God says. Because I have refused him, for the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. God saw what was in the heart of Eliab. And did he see in him a man after God's own heart? He didn't. That's what he saw in Jesse's youngest son, number 8, he wasn't even brought there at this time. He was back keeping the sheep. That was the heart that God was looking at. Now everybody else was looking at his age. I mean, here's this ruddy young kid. couldn't possibly be him. He wasn't even considered, whatever it was about, nobody else knew. But whatever the occasion was, David surely didn't need to be there. That was obviously part of it, being the youngest one there. Of course, by his faithfulness, who would do a better job of keeping the sheep while everybody's gone? So that's also a credit to him. But God was looking on his heart. That was the point God was making, to look on the heart and judge by the heart, not by what's on the outside. That's following in God's ways in the pathway of equity. Psalm 138, verse 6, if we'll turn over there. Psalm 138, verse 6. It says, though the Lord be high, yet hath he respect unto the lowly. But the proud he knoweth afar off. See, God doesn't respect faces. But again, as we saw in Acts 10:34 and 35, and in 1 Samuel 16, 7, God judges by the heart. The ones he's going to show respect to or to accept, to receive, will be those who fear him and are keeping his commandments, working righteousness. Here he describes those as being the humble. I mean, who's going to fear God and keep his commandments but the humble? That's what Jesus was. That was the mind of Christ. We remember Philippians chapter 2 and verse 8, how he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Humility is expressed by submission to God's commandments. So when he speaks of this humility here that God respects, that's again, those would be the ones who fear him and keep his commandments, the humble. The proud God does not know. He's not going to show respect to them. So based on judging those by their pride or their humility, is that on the outside or is that according to what's in their heart? Is that fair to judge that way? That's very fair. That's very equal and even. And that's how God judges. Now, what might be one of the first examples that come to mind of that kind of situation and God judging by that? How about the fourth chapter of the book of Genesis, verses 3 through 7, Cain and Abel. As they were given a commandment to make an offering, the original giving of the commandment's not recorded here. The aftermath is when Abel obeyed God and kept his commandment, but Cain did not. And we see God's response to the obedience of Abel, the disobedience of Cain. The humility of Abel resisting the pride of Cain. And God spoke to Cain here about this matter. Let's read Genesis 4, 3 through 7. And in process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted. And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. Look at the question. If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you don't, you won't. I mean, that's the point. Doesn't that go right along with what we were reading in Psalms 138, verse 6 a second ago? In Acts 10, 34, 35, 1 Samuel 16, 7, 2 Chronicles 19, 7, all these verses we've looked at tonight, describing the way God judges, no respecter of persons, not by the appearance, but righteously according to the heart and according to what a person does. I mean, it started here with Cain and Abel as one of the early examples of it, but we see so many more. What about at the end? There's a judgment day coming. We sing that song a lot of times, but there is a great day coming. The day of God's judgment, it is coming. Now, fewer and fewer people believe that, and it's all around us, the boldness of mankind, not considering their Maker, and that there's going to be a day of judgment where they're going to have to give account to Him of all these things they're saying and doing. And what a day that's going to be. But we're all going to be there before Him on that day. We're all going to have to give account to Him for the things that we've done in this life. And that is going to be the basis of how God judges everybody on that day. He's going to be showing His equity towards in His judgment on that day. Romans chapter 2, verses 5 through 11. But after thy hardness and impenitent heart, treasures up unto thyself wrath against the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will render to every man according to his deeds. To them who by patient continuance in well-doing seek for glory and honor, immortality, eternal life. But unto them that are contentious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish upon every soul of man that doeth evil, of the Jew first and also of the Gentile, but glory, honor, and peace to every man that worketh good, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile, for there is no respect of persons with God. What a person's ethnicity is, whether they're Jew or Gentile or whatever they were in this life, race, color, nationality, language, all those kinds of things, is that going to have any bearing on our judgment before God and where we spend our eternity? Not one bit. It's all going to be based on what? What our heart is like and what we've done in this life. Does that sound like a fair and righteous way to judge? Does that sound like equity, evenness? It is. And God's ways are equal in how He judges others. Colossians chapter 3, 23 through 25. This is also used as part of our motivation, why we should do everything in this life heartily for Him, knowing He's going to judge us righteously in the end for that. Are we going to be rewarded for our service to Him? Yes. Colossians chapter 3, 23 to 25, He says, "And whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons." See how he says that over and over again? One more we'll look at. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 17. He says, "And if you call on the Father who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear." And does that not make a difference to us in how we live our lives, knowing that we're going to be judged righteously by God, and it's going to be not by the appearance, but He's going to judge us in equity and righteously according to what we've done? So we don't have to worry about whether we're going to be treated unfairly in the judgment and things that we might have to think about when we're dealing with, or men are dealing with us. But God is going to always deal with us righteously. But then for us, we see that nature of God and how He practices. What's the point for us? Well, we're very thankful and should appreciate the blessing and the way that God does work with us, and that all His ways are equal and His judgment. But are we not going to practice the same? Can we practice inequity and be unequal in our ways and think we're going to receive mercy from God? We have to learn His ways and practice them. That is absolutely required of us as His children if we're going to receive His blessings in the end. Now in the Old Testament, in Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 15, He gave commandment to the Israelites, "Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor." So He was teaching them not to respect faces. Said the same thing in Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 19. So that commandment was repeated there in the book of Deuteronomy. He says, "Thou shalt not wrest judgment, thou shalt not respect persons, neither take a gift, for a gift doth blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteous." That pervert, that's a twisting, a making it crooked, not straight and even. It's the opposite of equity. So He commanded that to His people in the Old Testament. In the Proverbs themselves, now remember, one of the main points of the Proverbs is to teach us these good paths so that we would have the instruction of wisdom and righteousness and judgment and equity. So that, those are the things we need to be looking for in the Proverbs. We need to be looking for those pathways being exposed from each of those Proverbs. We need to think about that as we're going through and looking at those in our own study. Trying to find those things. But many of these Proverbs, we're going to see this pathway of equity brought to the fore and being taught to us. Look at Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 23. Proverbs 24:23. He says, "These things also belong to the wise. It is not good to have respect of persons in judgment." Is this not part of the pathway of equity? Well, also in judgment. These things do overlap, and they're very interrelated, righteousness and judgment and equity. But we see that not having respect to persons in judgment, that's a very important concept that we need to understand and need to put into practice. Proverbs chapter 28 Verse 21, he says, to have respect to persons is not good, for a piece of bread that man will transgress. It's not good to do that. Now, he's also very clear on this in the New Testament and teaching us this. John chapter 7 and verse 24, this is almost identical in word to what we read a moment ago in 1 Samuel 16, 7. John 7 and verse 24, he says, judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Now, there is a commandment to judge, and we do have to judge. There's some that take Matthew chapter 7 and verse 1 in the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus said, judge not that you be not judged, ignore the rest of the context, and will say that we can't practice any kind of judgment, that it's wrong. No, when he says, judge not that you be not judged, he's not blanketly forbidding all judgment. There is a particular kind of wrong judgment that that context deals with. But we very clearly see that all judgment is not out of bounds to us. In fact, that we're required and commanded to practice it and exercise it. Judge righteous judgment. That's a command. We are to judge, but there's a way to judge and a way not to. He says, not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. That's like God. We need to judge like He does, and we need to follow the pathway of equity in our judgment like He does. Let's look at James chapter 2. This is a practical example when they were not judging righteous judgment, but were in fact judging by the appearance in God's church here. In a matter that he's going to describe in these verses of James chapter 2, starting in verse 1, my brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect to persons. Have we seen that before? And he says, for if there come unto your assembly a man with a gold ring and goodly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and ye have respect to him that weareth the gay clothing, and say to him, sit thou here in a good place, and say to the poor, stand thou there, sit here under my footstool, are ye not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of evil thoughts? Now, is it possible that a person, that a human being, might be impressed by the wealth of someone and show favoritism towards someone who has wealth over someone who's poor in this world? Does that ever happen? That happens. That's the way of the world. Can Christians be tempted to exercise that same kind of thinking and judgment? Here he says it was happening. And he goes on to remind us of some things. The fact this is evil, but he says in verse 5, hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he hath promised to them that love him? But ye have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? Do not they blaspheme that worthy name by the which you are called? If you fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, you do well. But if you have respect to persons, you commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors. So on the basis of rich versus poor, I mean, that's the outside. That's by the appearance. That's respecting faces. That's, he calls it sin. So we just read in Proverbs, he says it's not good. It isn't good. It is in fact sin. It's transgressing God's commandment. He commands us not to judge that way. We are to judge according to the heart. We need to judge like God does. And we should all be thankful God judges us righteously. But following what we know of as the golden rule, what Jesus taught, that as we would have men to do to us, we should do to others also. Remember, all, that commandment and all others hang upon those two great commandments, to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And he quotes from that one in Leviticus 19:18, which is also repeated in the New Testament numerous times, there in James 2, verse 8. We need to practice that. But how many of us want to be judged by the faith, by the outward appearance? We don't want to be judged that way. So is it righteous for us to judge other people that way when we don't want to be judged that way? See, that's not loving others as we would love ourselves. That's not practicing Jesus' teachings to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. That's not practicing or obeying the commandment for us to judge in equity like God does. And we need to follow the Lord in His ways in all things. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 9, he gives another particular application of this principle in speaking to those who have authority over others, those who are earthly masters, and the ones who are subject to them. They have a commandment in the way that they are to deal with them. In Ephesians 6 and verse 9, He says, "And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him." So again, he's reminding us of that principle, the way God judges and the way he does not, and tells us to deal with others in that manner. If they're under our authority, and there are lots of ways in which we can have people under our authority, it could be in our jobs, in our homes, it can even be in the church, for elders in the church, but there can be many applications of this principle, but the point is we need to practice what God practices in his judgment and this pathway of equity in dealing with others. Let's look at Colossians chapter 4 and verse 1, and he's going to teach the same point here and actually use the word equity here in the New Testament, and this Greek word, isotes, means likeness, and it's where we get our word equal from. It means the same thing. It's exactly synonymous with the Hebrew words we're looking at. But in Colossians 4 and verse 1, he says, "Masters, give unto your servants that which is just and equal, knowing that that ye also have a master in heaven." We see this over and over again. We're called to remember God's ways and how he deals with us and how he judges us in righteousness and in equity, and he tells us to practice that same kind of judgment in dealing with others. Now, there are several other aspects of the pathway of equity that we want to study about that we do not have time for the remainder of tonight. We are out of time tonight, so we're going to try to pick up from here and study a bit more on this subject, Lord willing, next Sunday night. So there's a lot more good that we can dig into and learn of the pathway of equity. More aspects of this as far as the heart of God and his nature and how we can follow him in his ways and practice them as we should. For this evening at this time, though, we want to extend the Lord's invitation now to anyone that is here that it has the need of obeying the gospel of Christ, to repent and be baptized in his name for the remission of sins. We've been very encouraged to have several of our young people to have done this recently. We rejoice in that, as does heaven. And if you can provide more rejoicing for us and for God and the angels in heaven, if your need is to obey his gospel, please do so right now to bring that joy to us all. If you are a Christian and if you do need to repent of sin tonight, or if you need the prayers and encouragement of your brethren, you have the opportunity to come forward at this time as well. So anyone that needs to respond to the Lord's invitation, please come right now while we stand and sing.